From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, June 4th, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Red Zone Wireless, providing a local alternative for broadband throughout Maine. Learn more at redzonewireless.com.
The state legislature has passed a bill aiming to prohibit the sale of food packaging with certain industrial chemicals. The Senate today sent the bill to Governor Janet Mills, who has pushed to explore contamination risks from chemicals known as PFAS. The EPA announced plans to place legal limits on the chemicals long used in consumer products, but hasn't yet done so. PFAS was created by DuPont in 1938 and first used for nonstick cookware. Maine's bill could ban the sale of food packaging with PFAS by 2022, but only if the state finds safer alternatives are available. Maine lobstermen meet with state marine resources officials in Trenton this evening to consider coming regulations that could force the industry to reduce by half the amount of fixed-gear trap rope placed in the ocean. That's one of several measures Maine representatives to a special task force on the endangered North Atlantic right whale agreed to last month in an effort to meet a federal requirement to significantly reduce annual right whale injuries and mortality due to entanglement in fishing gear. Kristen Porter, president of the Maine Lobstermen's Association, says it can be done, but it'll be difficult.
And I don't think anybody will be happy to do it, but I think, you know, a lot of guys realize that it's probably what we're going to have to do.
Tonight's meeting of the Lobster Zone B Council starts at 6 at the Trenton Elementary School. The Department of Marine Resources has scheduled such meetings in each of the state's 7 lobster zones over the course of this month. And contract negotiations between Calais Regional Hospital and the union that represents several dozen nurses and medical lab scientists are at an impasse. After nearly 9 months of negotiation, including 3 meetings with a federal mediator, the hospital gave what it called its final offer last month. Calais Regional Hospital spokeswoman Dee Dee Travis says the proposed contract changes employee benefits to account for the financial challenges the rural hospital is facing.
We are trying to do a global look and a future look on what's best for the organization so that we can continue to be here.
But Megan LaPlante, a medical lab scientist on staff, says a recently issued staff memo stated that the hospital just had their best fiscal year in a decade. She says union employees represented by the Maine State Nurses Association are asking the hospital to preserve current wages and benefits. In weather tonight, overcast skies with some showers in the south and lows in the low 40s to mid 50s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy north, cloudy south with some showers and highs in the 60s. On Thursday, cloudy with some rain in the south, but partially clearing in the afternoon, highs in the low to mid 70s. Maine Governor Janet Mills is asking Maine lawmakers and voters to approve a $239 million bond package that she says will provide needed investments in Maine's future and create an environment that will attract families to move to the state. Mal Leary has details.
Governor Mills says she worked with her commissioners and other state officials to craft a strategy aimed at bolstering Maine's economy through targeted investments in both infrastructure and the ongoing labor shortage.
My administration is tackling the challenges we have head-on through targeted, reasonable investments that will strengthen the economy and develop a strong, skilled workforce and support a clean energy environment and help fix our aging infrastructure.
The largest bond, $105 million, would be dedicated to transportation repairs and upgrades. Specifically, $80 million would be targeted to road and bridge repairs and improvements, and $20 million for ports, airports, and rail facilities. That bond is expected to bring in another $137 million in matching funds, mostly from the federal government. Even with the borrowing, the state backlog of projects will continue to grow, with the cost of projects continuing to increase. The governor is also proposing a $30 million investment in broadband infrastructure, a first for the state. But Mills says it's all part of a strategy to improve the economy by investing in Mainers.
The second pillar of our bond proposal invests $19 million in a series of bonds to support workforce training, career and technical education, and access to quality child care.
Mills is also asking for $65 million for conservation, wastewater, and renewable energy projects. The Popular Land for Maine's Future program which is nearly out of money, would get $30 million to protect land from development and keep it available for traditional recreational uses. Republicans are just starting to look at Mills' proposal. Republican Senator Jim Hamper of Oxford is on the Appropriations Committee and says the budget Mills submitted had enough money for debt service to allow for $300 million in borrowing.
There's still more time. There's still more negotiation room as far as what gets included in there.
It will take two-thirds vote of the legislature to put the question to voters. In addition to the governor's plan, lawmakers have submitted borrowing proposals that total more than $2 billion. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And in Portland, city councilors last night postponed choosing between two possible sites to build a 150-bed replacement for its overflowing Oxford Street homeless shelter. Many speakers called on the council to reject both options, one on the city's busy West Commercial Street and one in a wooded residential Riverton neighborhood on the city's outskirts. Jane Drew, who is now living at the Oxford Street shelter, says both are inappropriate. The first is beset by dangerous traffic, she says, and the other is too far away from needed social services. She noted that both sites years ago had been proposed for a city recycling center.
We're just like you, except for the fact that we don't have a consistent, permanent, safe place to lay our heads after a long day. People experiencing homelessness don't deserve to be looked at as trash. Most people want to work, support themselves, and be in a consistent, permanent, safe place at the end of the day.
But several people who live near the existing shelter in East Bayside, as well as other shelters concentrated in the city's peninsula, told the council that neighborhood conditions have steadily deteriorated over the last decade, hand in hand with the rise of the opioid epidemic, and that a decision must be made. The council postponed a decision until later this month to allow one absent councilman an opportunity to vote on the issue. Over the winter, we've been able to watch a building go up across the way from our Portland studios. And it turns out that building is the new home of Indigo Arts Alliance, a new arts nonprofit that aims to improve the visibility of Maine's artists of color while connecting them with the national arts community. Ed Morin headed over to the space to speak with founders Marcia and Daniel Minter about how conversations with friends over decades led to the project.
Hello, how are you?
Marcia
Ed Morin.
Hi, nice to meet you. All right, so as we walk through the space, what we did intentionally was build a studio that had a big open communal floor plan in the front, in the majority of the space. We're just a little over 4,000 square feet. We wanted to be able to accommodate different art forms, recognizing that we have, especially among the communities of color here in Maine, creative people and artists who are working across a plethora of disciplines. And so to really be able to engage and create a space that really is reflective of community, we knew that we needed to be able to be interdisciplinary. Hey, Daniel.
Hi. So I guess a very basic question is just, how did this center come about?
Whenever we're in space, sharing space, and in conversation with other artists of color, the topic of, oh, I wish we had a space where we could really kind of just share ideas, professional practices, inspiration, our experiences, and even in some cases collaborate together. And this has happened no matter where we lived. And it's really come forth here because there's so many artist residency programs and various opportunities for artists. But many of them are located in these really beautiful bucolic areas that are remote and not in Portland. And so the artists, the people of color that live in Portland, unless they have personal relationships with some of these artists that may be maybe in residency elsewhere, they don't know that they've ever been here. They haven't had exposure to them. And both parties have missed out on a wonderful opportunity to be in exchange and community with each other. And so that's why we wanted to create an idea for a residency model that was based in a city that was specifically for artists of color, so that artists that are coming from away, maybe in resident or not, know where to go, and also the artists that are local know where to go when they want to have that experience in reciprocity. We're hosting currently our first inaugural artist in resident. Her name is Ineda Sanchez, and she is here from Salvador, Bahia, Brazil, where she is originally from. These artists are coming to work with our local artist here. So we have an artist here named Ebenezer Acapo, and we have paired the two of them together, and Ineda will function as a mentor and help him to continue to think about how he builds on his artistic practice.
And is there a large enough community here in the state of Maine, artists of color, to sustain this very, very nice new center?
Yes, absolutely. Daniel, do you want to speak to that?
When we moved here, the population was very different. And I can say that over the years it has changed. It would be negligent to think that the community will not continue to change. There are young artists who are working in Maine. There are older artists that are here in Maine, but they have been isolated so far. We are hoping to remedy some of the feeling of isolation by having a place where they can all come at once and have a dialogue. I grew up in Georgia where there were signs that said white only. I grew up in the generation where those signs had been removed. The signs had been removed, but the attitudes were still there. And as I've gone out throughout this country, there are certain places where that attitude is just still there, that this space is not for you. So we are always reminded that this needs to happen.
So this space is one way to make that happen.
This space and what we're doing here is also intended, again, to serve as a pipeline in partnership with the community at large, because we want those spaces to transform too. We are not interested in only this space functioning in a specific way for a specific group of people. We're interested in this space being a manifestation of the ideas and the concepts that Daniel referred to, and then being a pipeline out to share those ideas as broadly as possible, not just here in Maine either, but nationally, internationally. You know, we talked about the mission. The vision is that everybody is going to benefit from this work.
Marcia and Daniel Minter talking about the new arts nonprofit Indigo Arts Alliance. The organization will hold its first artist workshops this coming Saturday as part of a community symposium on sustenance, creativity, and multiracial democracy. The day will culminate with a meal prepared by Brazilian and Portland-based African chefs.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a conversation with the new head of Maine's Department of Transportation. I'm Nora Flaherty.